It's the Kentucky State Fantasy Football Championship Podcast with your host, Farrell Elliott. In-depth analysis, player updates, start 'em, sit 'em, more. Now here's Farrell.
Good evening, Robbie Fetcher. It's Farrell and Fetch, everyone. We're back in the studio for the first podcast of 2017. Is that right, Fetch? Is this our first one?
It's a long time no see, but great to see friends again, isn't it?
I've missed you, buddy. I really have. I've been in a lot of football circles lately, and it's not the same if I'm not traveling with my right-hand man, Fetch. So let's start those travels before we begin to talk about the business season. We've had two very exciting things happen. The playoffs leading up to the grand game of all sports, the Super Bowl. And then we had our first draft of the season, our 2017 Super Bowl Week Keeper League, Dynasty Keeper League, which, Fetch, you apparently chose fifth in. You had the fourth draft spot in. Yeah. Very good job. I appreciate you jumping in, and we'll review some of the first round with all the owners. Let's talk Super Bowl, Fetch. You obviously watched the game every play, sat on the edge of your seat, even through New England's early foibles with the football.
I did. It'd been a really, I won't say crappy, but just a slow playoff season. Besides the Green Bay-Dallas game, been some bad games in the playoffs.
There were some games that didn't excite you, Fetch.
No, but the Super Bowl, I think, paid us back in extra with that drama, the all-time comeback. I call it the all-time giveaway. I mean, I see it more that Atlanta lost the game than New England won it. Obviously, New England had to do it.
Sure.
They did everything they could. But Atlanta just gave so many things back to him. I got to think as a coach, Gus Bradley's just kicking himself. How many times they could have just taken 10 extra seconds off a play the last quarter and a half? How many times they should have just handed the ball off instead of let Matt Ryan take sack? Julio Jones made the greatest catch in Super Bowl history, and it would have sealed the deal if they wouldn't have messed it up.
You can't convince a Giant fan of that, and then you can't convince a Patriots fan of that because he'll tell you the Edelman catch was the greatest catch in Super Bowl history. And you can't convince a Pittsburgh fan that because he'll tell you the Wallace catch was the greatest.
Not Wallace. Antonio Holmes.
Oh, it's Holmes, number 10.
Those are the two best. Again, the Tyree catch, obviously Edelman catch. There's a little luck involved in that and everything else. What Julio did was pure skill.
Yes, it was beautiful. No, it wasn't the coverage there.
The coverage was right over there. No, you couldn't ask for any more.
It was a wonderful, I've had the pleasure. 12 years ago, I started with my friends, the guys that I hadn't seen in a long time. And I said, look, every year we're going to go to the Super Bowl in Vegas. That was 12 years ago. I've made it 11 out of the 12. We had an ice storm. I wasn't gonna tell the family, folks, you don't have any electricity and you're freezing to death, I'm going to Las Vegas. That wasn't going to happen. So I missed one year. So we gathered again in Las Vegas, got in there Saturday night. And what was interesting is that there weren't Denver fans running around shouting, and there were, the fandom of this Super Bowl was not the same as I've experienced in recent years. But it was very difficult by the time I got there. And I think fantasy players are well conditioned and well prepared to do well with the proposition bets. Have you ever played those?
No, but I'd always look at them. But yes, I think you're right, fantasy players, because you kind of know what to expect.
Well, on the New England side, what really jumped out at me was Danny Amendola. The over-under total yardage was 18.5. That's woefully low. Just woefully low. And a number of the other, in Edelman's case, over 7.5 catches, and they had already betted up to minus $1.50. The yardage was 92, and he fell under both those numbers. Hogan fell under his numbers. LeGarrette Blount fell under his numbers. James White, who could have expected that?
You never know. They had Deion Lewis the first game, LeGarrette a little better the second, and then James White the third. You never. After that Super Bowl, I may never pick another Patriot besides Brady and maybe Edelman Gronk again. Because you have no idea what's going on in the brains of those people in New England.
Deion Lewis was missing in action from the very start of the game. I kept wondering, where is he? Why is he? And you know, he didn't need to contribute because James White did all of it. But the guy I knew that would be part of the game, and there was also an interesting, will Danny Amendola catch a touchdown, paid 8-1. So I made a modest bet on both sides, and they both came in. And I, knowing that I had that money in the bank, I said, well, you know, at halftime, right before halftime it was live betting, I said, New England's going to make a comeback. They're not going to come back enough to win this game, but they're going to make a comeback. So I bet to try to even out my wager that I'd already had on the Patriots. And Lord, did I not expect the result that came with that overtime victory.
You got a double dip there? Is that
my goodness. It got things off to a wonderful start in Las Vegas at the Super Bowl. And what a great week it was. And, you know, one of these days we're going to incorporate that into the KFFSC and maybe bring a group of our owners out there for Super Bowl weekend, because I really think the trick is to come in on Saturday night, enjoy the Sunday, and stay around a couple days after everybody leaves. By Tuesday, it's a relative ghost town, and you can kind of move around a little bit. And one of the things I did, was it Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday? Time kind of stands still out there. But I had the pleasure. He came over to the Hard Rock and see me. They've got a great Mexican restaurant in Hard Rock. I sat down and had lunch with our 2016 champion, Mark Salinas.
Oh, well, that's great.
He was an excellent guy. And so we talked and talked and, you know, talked all our way through lunch. And I can't wait for him to come to Louisville. He's fired up to come to the draft next year. He's going to get in on Thursday, early Friday, and spend the whole weekend with us. And what a worthy champion he is. And he has jumped in. We have our next keeper draft scheduled for February 23rd, Thursday night at 9 p.m. And he, along with eight other owners, have signed up for that one. A couple of guys repeating from the first one. So we've got one in the books and one coming up on February 23rd. So, guys, there's four or five spots left for that one, and we would love to have you. You want to talk a little bit, Fetch, since you participated in the first one? You want to give our players an idea? I suppose we could start with the first round, so to speak.
We will. I would suggest anybody out there that's interested in doing it. It's a great way to do a keeper draft because there's a little more intrigue in it, because you got to play a little GM role where you think guys are going to go. What I mean, is Kirk Cousins going to get that paycheck of more than of Andrew Luck? And we've already heard Rashard Jennings, Victor Cruz being cut. Paul Perkins may move up that draft board. There's just a lot of conjecture that you can put in, even more so than a normal keeper league where you're looking to the future for rookies and everything else.
You know, when I announced this format, I said we're going to have two phases of the draft on February 23rd, and the other one was what, January or January 30th or whenever it was. And no, February 2nd. Well, whenever, doesn't matter. So whenever everybody got together and had the draft, we have a phase one on the date of the draft, and we have an August date to be determined for phase two. And in each phase, you draft 16 players. So rookies and free agents will make part of phase two, and the players that ended the year on NFL rosters will consist of phase one. And you'll have to be down to 22 by September 4th.
Right, and again, that played some strategy in here. I went at one of the only one. Me and another guy picked a kicker late 15th, 16th round.
Who'd you pick?
Justin Tucker, just because I think he's the best going forward. But the second reason I did it, other guys are going to be drafting a kicker. I'm hoping to draft a rookie. I feel like that might give me one extra rookie that I can get to go through the future, since this is a keeper league. You know, I don't know when other guys are planning on taking that kicker, but, I mean, you got to take one sometime. Same way with a defense. Defense, to me, is a little more – in a keeper league, it's really hard to go out 2, 3, 4 years because defense
should
change.
It's hard to project out 1 year.
Right.
So it's impossible almost. Well, you know, I think it, for for our benefit, this was a dynasty draft for our redraft leagues that will take place at the KFFSC. We still can give some good information here. Those first three, they were the running backs, as everybody expects. This week, or in this draft, rather, they went in the order of Elliott, Johnson, Bell. Is that how you see them going most of the year?
I do. I mean, obviously, we're assuming Le'Veon's going to get either a long-term extension or the franchise tag. You know, it's kind of interesting. Both Johnson and Bell in their last game of the season did kind of get nicked up.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that definitely puts Elliott up one, because you feel like he's going healthy with the best offensive line. I think that's what separates him. The other two, you know, they're kind of either way. They both have aging quarterbacks. Right before this draft, we did learn Carson was going to – or actually Fitzgerald was going to come back. I think it was a day or two later we learned Carson's coming back. And again, the kind of crazy news right before this that Ben Roethlisberger, after the season, said, well, maybe retirement's not too far in my future. And all these things play a role in how these players are going to be picked in draft.
I don't know what I don't know what the purpose of that was. I think maybe he's just a little bit down based on what happened in the playoffs. But those players, Elliott, Johnson, Bell, 1, 2, 3, that was Justin Cox picking Elliott. Kenny Gibson, who stepped up. This is his first ancillary he's ever played with us. I'm thrilled that Kenny got Johnson. And then Sean Ligon, our good buddy. He must have been thrilled to find Le'Veon Bell at the number three spot. I bet if Sean went number one, he'd be thinking Le'Veon Bell. He loves those catches. And then, Fetch, the light shines on you. We've got three receivers, and I think you've dictated exactly how they're going to fall when we move around to August. The first receiver off the board, the fourth draft pick in this draft, Odell Beckham Jr., then Mike Evans, and then Julio Jones rounds out with the third receiver pick, sixth player overall. Beckham, Evans, Jones. Is that about how you would find it every time?
I got to believe Antonio Brown's going to kick up in there a few times. He did have, I won't say a down year by his standards this past year.
Didn't finish well and didn't publicly conduct himself well.
And exactly, and I think that's why he dropped in this draft. I mean, there's even conjecture out there, Steelers thinking about trading him or, you know, looking somewhere else because of those antics. But again, with his consistency, I got to believe somebody will at least look at that sixth spot, him and Julio. I think in these keeper league drafts, Beckham and Evans, you know, kind of go up a little early because they're in their going into their third season.
Exactly. And Julio Jones, aforementioned Super Bowl forgotten greatest catch ever for Julio Jones. Beckham, Evans, Jones go to Fetch with Evans going to J.A. Carey and Mike Fox. You guys might have heard a little bit about them. And Trevor Bacon Kelsey takes Julio Jones at the number six spot. I dislike the six spot in all drafts. I'll say that again. You know. Coming up at seven. Now here's where we get a little off tilt from what we would have in our redraft leagues. Coming up in the seventh pick is the team of Kurt All and Crafty Bachman. Travis Cox, the more commonly known Cox brother in this event. Travis Cox comes in with the eighth pick, and Ray Chung, straight out of Hong Kong, picks ninth. And they stay at receiver, although surprisingly to a lot, Raider Cooper goes the number seven pick. Amari Cooper, the number seven pick. Travis Cox licks his chop. It's at eight, takes Antonio Brown. The number ninth pick, Indiana Colts wide receiver T.Y. Hilton. Naturally, we expect it to look a little different in August.
Yes, I definitely think so. I think a little youth with Cooper there going in a keeper league. And surprisingly, I mean, I'm always in a first-round wide receiver. I'm looking for a guy that gets touchdowns. We're going to see here that A.J. Green dropped out of the first round, and that just really surprised me. Mm-hmm. I know he's coming off an injury, and that does worry some, but I think when the redraft comes along as everything's great with his health, he'll be up in that middle of the first round pick.
That's where I believe he belongs if he does recover, which the nature of the injury suggests he should. Now, what's your – What's your thought that Antonio Brown could be anything other than a Pittsburgh Steeler in 2017?
I thought the relationship between Roethlisberger and Brown was great. I mean, all the years that they created magic when Ben stayed out of the pocket or got those extra 3 or 4 seconds.
Uh-huh.
He knew exactly where Brown was going, and it was excellent. So on the field, obviously, it always has been, but obviously something in the locker room or something's going wrong. I mean, obviously, we saw the Facebook Live, and
it
really irked some people. You have the whole Terry Bradshaw thing, kind of calling out their coach late in the year that he's just a cheerleader, and you just wonder if all that we thought was golden in there is not, and there's some chinks in the armor. And again, with Ben talking, maybe he wants some control. Maybe he wants some. I don't know. You know, they also got young receivers like Martavius Bryant coming back. Does Ben think those guys can do better? Obviously, the guys didn't step up this year. Sammy Coates didn't step up.
Eli Rogers is suspected step up.
He stepped up over Marcus Wheaton. We don't know what goes on in that locker room, and that's what makes this draft so tough.
I think we're seeing a little bit of it. He's pouting. They say Antonio Brown's pouting when he doesn't get the ball. You don't like to see that in a team, so we'll just leave it at that. Okay, we finish up with the 10, 11, 12 picks, and the two wide receivers that go 10 and 11 here, our drafters are Rick Ross, Bobby Sangerman, and Johnny Lincoln. Ross, Sangerman, and Lincoln. And they go receiver, receiver, running back. It's DeAndre Hopkins, picked by Rick Ross. Robinson, out of Jacksonville, picked by Bobby Sangerman. And Johnny Lincoln breaks the run of wide receivers, choosing running back Freeman of Atlanta. Were you surprised to see Hopkins and Robinson in this lofty first-round position?
I'm surprised just based on their performance last year, specifically Robinson, because Doug Marrone is now coming back, and Doug Marrone really did, once the head coach had been let go, really kind of got Bortles and Robinson going again. So I think Robinson's still up there. Hopkins, talent-wise, no doubt, but gosh, you still got to worry about the quarterback in Houston.
He laid the biggest egg, and boy, it wasn't his fault, but he laid the biggest egg of any wide receiver. He was the biggest disappointment in fantasy football, perhaps.
He was, but again, I think the reason that he was drafted is because 2 years ago, he had equally as bad quarterback play and put up huge numbers.
Yeah, different quarterbacks.
Exactly.
And he still looked more disconnected from this quarterback than he ever did last year. But, you know, here we are into our first show, and I found a way to get my favorite Raider into the conversation. Seth Roberts is now my key. Because Hopkins did not have as many touchdowns as Seth Roberts. That's my test.
Wow.
Seth Roberts, more TDs than Hopkins. That's got me wondering.
We're going to talk about the silly season later, if we're not the business. How silly did Houston look at that contract with the quarterback out of Denver there?
Yeah, well, I don't know how silly it is because they've got a step-out clause, you know. We'll get to that in a second. You know, Johnny Lincoln, let's give him some kudos. We mentioned A.J. Green. That's who he led off the second round with. So there's a baker's dozen of picks for you. In looking at this draft, I like the strategies employed. We mentioned Sean Liggan, who did a nice combination of younger players and older players. We're going to look at players that were taken in this draft that are already bargains. We're going to talk about that a little later, but I want to put the spotlight on our man from Michigan, Rick Ross, because I thought he had an especially good draft in the first 6-7 rounds.
He did. I mean, he really knew what he wanted to do.
He followed up Hopkins with Gordon, then Jordy Nelson in the third round, which you have to love that. Sterling Shepard is one of his picks, a pick that's even better now.
Well, and that goes. You got the older guy in Jordy Nelson that you're going to ride a year or two more, and then you got Sterling Shepard just coming out of his rookie year. So now you've got three wide receivers going in next year that you know are going to be solid, and two of them are young enough you may have 10 years out of them.
Exactly. See, he's off to a great start with this draft, and it'll be incumbent on these guys now to get into the NFL draft and take a good look at these players that are moving up and down the first round. They're going to enjoy the combine even more, and then the NFL draft, and then when we gather in August online again, we'll see how these guys do in this draft. It's a good group. We've got an excellent group together for our next draft, February 23rd at 9 p.m. There's four spots left. If you want to play, let me know. Specialists, take a little break. We'll come back and talk a little bit about that beloved business season.
If you want
games, we have them.
Keepers,
auctions,
progressives,
find it all
at KFFSC.com.
Fetch, it's a cool and breezy but clear night in Louisville, Kentucky here in mid-February 2017, which means, Fetch, that we are only 7 months away from our gatherings in Cincinnati and at the Horseshoe, Southern Indiana. Cincinnati's date, Fetch, do you know it? Do you know it? It's a Sunday.
I do not.
August 20th, buddy. You win a prize. Very, very good, which naturally means our one day in Cincinnati will be followed up by 3 days at the Horseshoe, Southern Indiana, August 25th through 27th. Mark it on your calendar. My good friend Kirby Barker, Kirby and Melissa. Kirby is recovering from hip surgery. We send a big shout-out to Kirby and hope that he is feeling better, doing better. We wish he was here having one of those. Go ahead, crack it open there, Fetch. Wish he was having a cold bush with Fetch here in the studio. But Kirby may join us for the February 23rd draft, and he sent me a note. He said, when is the draft, Farrell? And I said, I got to get that word out. It is Horseshoe Casino, 25th through 27th, Cincinnati on the 20th. Other online main event drafts, the Scramble, the Flea Flicker, the Hail Mary, all of those drafts in and around those dates, check on. We'll be announcing a schedule very, very soon. Fetch, the business season has started. Where do you want to start? You want to talk quarterback?
Well, first of all, I mean, how much fun is it now the way they've restructured it so that you have the draft just a few weeks later?
Yes.
Kind of got the combine going on.
It's fun you for
got
everyone but the rookie players.
Well, do the free agents, I guess they like it. I guess they get a first dibs, don't they? Is that how it works now?
Ask me that question a little bit more directly. What are you asking?
Basically, when the teams are going after their needs, what's their first option now?
To the veteran.
Exactly. The veteran, well, it used to be the other way. It used to be the draft first, and then you kind of signed your free agents, and then haven't they changed it the last few years?
Well, no, the free agent season was always free agency and always ran before the draft. However, free agent season has been extended a little bit and the draft pushed back, which was really an accident because the room in New York where they had the draft was not available. So that's how that became pushed back.
It seems like we have no off season now, though. That makes the fun part of football. I mean, you got something to look forward all the time, whether it be the draft or trying to franchise guys right now. I mean, always talking football, always preparing. And as a fantasy player, you got to keep up with this stuff.
Well, you remember the Tuesday and Wednesday after the Super Bowl?
Yep.
That was your offseason, Fetch. That's what it was.
Bill Belichick did tell us no days off.
No days off. Let's go right back to work. Belichick has got a quarterback he has to make a decision on. And I think the decision is that this player will be somewhere else next year. I want to look at three quarterbacks, Jimmy Garoppolo, Mike Glennon, Tyrod Taylor. Fetch, let me find you a place. If you are at Chicago Bears, which one of these guys looks most like your quarterback?
Jimmy Garoppolo.
Why you say that?
Again, part of it's weather. He's shown that he's got that arm that you can play in. That's what New England likes. You got to have it in the weather. He's been through the mental grind that is New England.
He's had a lot of light on him.
Every week they prepare like you need to prepare to win games.
Yep.
And they need a leader. And I think, he can be that. He's understudied under the best leader in football.
I think that's the key word. He's been in the league for 26 games. He started two. Let's go to Mike Glennon. How many games has he started? 11, 12?
I was a little more than that, I thought, yeah, but so yes.
What do you remember about him?
You know, again,
because he's gotten rusty.
Not to bring Brock in there, but he reminds me of this tall, lanky, uncomfortable guy in the pocket. Uh-huh. I know he has the arm strength. I know he has some skills, won some games. But, again, I don't see the fluidity. Jimmy Garoppolo looks, you know, he looks like Tom Brady, looks big, strong, but not there's something about that lanky quarterback that mm-hmm. I don't like. Mm-hmm. I want the strong arm, Brett Favre, Aaron Rodgers guy.
Here's a guy that's not lanky, Tyrod Taylor. It's a guy that doesn't turn away from a challenge and a guy that has won in difficult circumstances and can beat you not only with his arm but with his feet. If you run a certain type of system, let's move you out of Chicago and let's put you in Cleveland. Do you want a Tyrod Taylor in Cleveland?
Tyrod Taylor, to me, is a stopgap quarterback. Uh-huh. He's a guy that can get you a couple years, maybe get you to the playoffs. I mean, I think he has uh-huh. that kind of talent. But you always got to have a quality guy because he gets banged up. So you got to have quality backup. Uh-huh. And I just don't think he wins you a Super Bowl. That means maybe he's good for Cleveland. Cleveland like to win some games. They're not worried. But for other teams, they're really looking to make that step up from, you know, 8-8 to playoff to Super Bowl. I don't think Tyrod Taylor's your guy.
The one team I didn't mention here is the Denver Broncos. Now let's talk about Trevor Siemian. Trevor Siemian is not that guy that's going to win you a Super Bowl. He's decent.
Right.
He's a decent quarterback who shoots a serviceable backup and can come off the bench and win games in case of injury. Is that the way you assess this player?
I do. Now, ironically, Denver may be the one place where that kind of guy could win a Super uh-huh. Bowl if that defense plays to what they did 2 years ago. Again, I don't know age with Talib and some of those guys if they can stay at that defensive level.
Yeah, and I don't know if the competition level in that division would allow Denver to get to walk through that division without a lot of firepower on the offensive side. And he's got whoever plays quarterback there has a lot of firepower around him. So let's turn the eye to Dallas and talk about, is this the home for Tony Romo?
It's definitely one of the options. To me, it looks like Houston, Denver. He's the kind of guy that's going to go to that team that's almost there.
What do you like about Tony Romo?
You know what? He's not big, he's not strong, but he's a playmaker. He mm-hmm. seems, even though he's made a lot of mistakes in the fourth quarter, he made a lot of plays, too. If you really look down, He just has that quality that play breaks down. He can spin.
Right.
He can find it. I mean, he can't put it in there. He can't, you know.
No, he doesn't have the arm strength. But he, you know what I love about him is his release. And I think about those receivers out there. I think about Sam.
Oh, he
that quick release.
Well, I think the thing you got to remember, Tony's been around so long. He's really smart. He basically you don't want to say he ran the offense like a Peyton did, but he got to the level at Dallas that he could dictate the offensive strategy.
Sure.
He could go to the line, he could change plays, and he's willing to hand the ball off to a running back when that's what needs to be done. Some of these young quarterbacks kind of get it in their gusto that they got to win the game and they want to check out of that run play that's there to try to win the game. Tony's pretty good about staying with the game plan and doing what needs to be done to win. And there's a lot of rumors that, man, last few weeks of practice, he looked like the 2014 Romo that was good.
Everybody was anxious to have him back on the field somewhat, despite all the great play from Dak. You know what I like? And I like the accidental quarterback. If I'm running an NFL team, I don't know if I can depend on it, but that's what I like. Tom Brady is going down now as the greatest quarterback of all time.
Raw, definitely.
So, but he's an accidental quarterback.
Sure.
You can argue that Drew Brees is an accidental quarterback. He goes to Miami, and they said, you know.
Definitely New Orleans.
We'll take Cole. Okay, he ends up in New Orleans, and nobody expected that. Tony Romo is the classic accidental quarterback.
Undrafted.
He barely got signed out of the OVC. You take who else fits that bill?
Russell Wilson, in a lot of ways, even though they knew it, Again, what I was going to ask you about with this, what we're talking about, isn't this kind of the new way to win in football?
Mm-hmm.
If you can get that underpaid quarterback,
that rookie
4-year deal,
Dak Prescott,
where you don't have to pay him, and you can spend money everywhere else and make. I mean, that's how Seattle did it. Even though they had their eye on Russell by getting him in the fourth round, you know, 3 or 4 years, not paying him much. You could really pay some of your other guys and really build a championship defense, offensive line, whatever you want to do.
I will say that Russell was an accidental quarterback to the league, but not to Seattle. But I would say that Tom Brady was even an accidental quarterback to New England.
They had their franchise guy.
Yeah,
they thought Drew Bledsoe would start
eight
more years. Tom Brady guy, we're just getting to back up. Hopefully, maybe we can trade him like we're going to trade Garofalo, like they traded Brian Hoyer, like they've done so many other guys. They're going to develop. Maybe he'll be decent. I mean, the footage of him at camp, I mean.
Some people say, Farrell, how are you going to rely on that accidental quarterback now? Okay, well, then, you know, the flip side of that is you're going to take a quarterback and you're going to make him your guy. You know, Miami guys are losing all jobs. Anybody goes to Miami because they're just damn set on making Tannehill quarterback, and I don't think they're ever going to get there. You're just damn set on making Bradford an NFL quarterback. I don't particularly think that's going to happen either. You know, you could say that Kansas City number 11,
Alex Smith, and Alex he was number Smith. One guy.
You know, you could talk about him. You know, and everyone who listens to the show knows that we're big on Carson Wentz, and I think Carson Wentz is going to buck the trend of what I'm talking about. But if you take a look at the last 6 or 8 games of Carson Wentz season, you know, we talked about rookies hitting the wall, but at the quarterback position, you would expect him to get a little better. He actually stepped back statistically towards the end of the year. He had a rough time.
There's no doubt. I mean, it's a crapshoot in the first round with quarterbacks lately. I mean, the college game is so different from the NFL, and they can look the part. You know, they can make the throws in college, but it's just a different game. The windows are so much smaller that if you can find that guy, if you're not sure about a guy in the first round, you're better off taking a fourth and a sixth round guy.
Sure.
You know, Kirk Cousins.
Mm-hmm.
He's actually, they drafted a guy in the first round and then drafted Kirk Cousins in like the sixth round. And now he's their franchise quarterback per se if they either tag him or sign him.
I get what you're saying. I think it was the fourth round, but I get exactly what you're saying. You talk about friends in the football world. If you were watching a little bit of the NFL Network today, you saw Julian Edelman come in and talk about his quarterback, and he said, you know, he has a Brett Favre, Aaron Rodgers mentality. So does Jimmy Garofalo. Now, that's high praise.
That's real high praise.
Disseminated all over the place. You don't like any of the rookie quarterbacks? You don't like this college group?
I don't. I mean, Deshaun Watson's a winner, so he may end up being okay, but it's kind of like the Jameis Winston thing. Man, he throws a lot of interceptions.
What about
and that? Just doesn't work out in the NFL if you turn the ball over.
What about the kid from North Carolina?
Again, I'm way down on him. I think he's more hype of almost like a combine type thing. He looks good, throws the arm, but guys who've not went 4 years of college and started two and a half years seem to not do as well in the NFL, or at least their curve, it takes them a lot longer.
What's his name, Tubinski?
Mitch, yeah.
And he reminds me a little bit of Wentz, just physically and looking at him. But I think the comparisons.
Well, it's a freakish offense they run at North Carolina. They run that spread, quick offense, so your numbers get inflated a little bit based on what you're doing.
Speaking of Carolina in the NFL side of the ball, as we begin the business season and free agents are available and you've got money to spend it at Carolina, you know, we're dealing with a salary cap. I think the number is $165 million. It might even be higher than that. Is this the year in this draft, which is rich with running backs, and in the free agency, which there are some available backs, is this the year that you get rid of Tolbert, that you give up on Cameron Artis Payne, and that you find a complimentary back with Stewart, and Cam Newton is no longer the number one rushing option for Carolina.
What I would do is I would – Stewart's up in age. That's the guy if you can take the cap it. I don't mind having Artis Payne or Tolbert because the price is usually better. What they really need, if Fournette were to drop to them, they need a big back. And the reason I say that is – takes that temptation of running Cam Newton so much. He takes so many hits. And again, part of that's because they got Stewart's big enough, but he's not that true pounder that Leonard Fournette could be. And I just think that, you know, Leonard Fournette, great talent, but I don't think there's a lot of teams he fits great into because so many teams. But yes, that's one of the places there. I mean, I'd hate for him to fall to New England. New England would find a way to use him. There's a few teams that would, and he's a great talent. And if he could find a place that'll let him run the football downhill and not worry about pass protect as much, not worry about him catching it out of the backfield, he finds his role. And like I said, Carolina's a good place because then it takes that. Cam's taken way too many hits the last few years. If you want him to last a few more years, they have receivers. They're not great. But he's shown last year he doesn't need great receivers to do well.
This is a true fact. What about the kid from down at Florida State? Is it young?
Dalvin Cook. Dalvin Cook. I think, to me, this is the best fantasy running back in the draft.
Mm-hmm.
And because of the way the game is played, I mean, as a Colts fan, I would love for him to end up in Indianapolis. Frank Gore's, I mean, he's on his last tooth. They have nothing else. But there's a lot of other teams. Tampa Bay, maxing him up with his old guy, Jameis Winston, he would look good with, too. So that's a guy I think, especially if he gets in a little bit of a pass offense because he's so good out of the backfield, Dalvin Cook will probably put up the best rookie running back numbers next year.
Who would you say he's the best pass catcher?
The kid out of Stanford, McCaffrey,
uh-huh.
He's really good and very vital. Almost, he's a better Danny Woodhead in a lot of ways, but because he's faster, his dad's played in the league, he's so versatile, you can do so many things with. He may be a better true passer, but I think Dalvin's more the true threat both ways.
You know, at the Senior Bowl, I saw a very interesting player that I fell in love with, and they talk about him being a middle-round pick. I like to tell fantasy players that this is my first player that I think they should look at and see where he goes and see if there's an opportunity for him to get on the field. And that is the kid, Jamal Williams from Brigham Young. Did you see this kid play in a year?
Running back, correct?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Kind of pretty big, right?
Exactly. 6'2", 220.
Yeah, no, I did a little bit. West Coast games kind of hard to watch sometimes.
Uh-huh. Well, when you got three kids.
And the competition level sometimes hard with Brigham Young. But, no, all those kids and kind of getting drafted in that area, the fourth, fifth round, coming up from a place like Brigham Young, usually have a toughness to them. Let you make the team, means they'll play special teams to help get themselves on the roster.
I asked an old scout, I said, what do you like about Williams? He says, Farrell, look at his stiff arm. He likes the stiff arm. And you know, there's a going through a drill, and he comes around, and there's a kid, a cornerback comes up to check him, and he pops that arm out there, and the cornerback goes head over ankles. Old scout looks at me and gives me a sideways grin. It's such a pleasure. Fetch, I think you ought to get a reprieve from all the girls at home, and the 2018 Senior Bowl, I think you should be there. I think you should go down with me. I drive down there. You don't have to get an airline ticket. You know, you just have to listen to me talk for like 10 hours. It's rough. It's a rough assignment. But there's my first sleeper of the draft, guys, Jamal Williams. Take a look at where he goes. You know, as we come up on February 23rd for this draft, Fetch, there's some players that already look better to me than they did on draft day. Now, the first one, because of what has happened with Victor Cruz, would be our good pal Sterling Shepard. I know the listeners maybe get tired of hearing us talk about Shepard, but we love the rookie, the 65 catches, the 8 TDs. We expect even better things with Victor Cruz out of the picture. And I thought Victor Cruz had a better year this year than I really expected. I didn't think much.
Yeah, again, the Giants were a little bit of an enigma on offense late in the year, in the playoffs as well. But you got to believe another year of chemistry with Eli, that those numbers will go up next year.
Okay, so and take a quick look at the board there and see which owner, if you can eyeball him, and I would guess it was in the double-digit round, but see which owner grabbed a hold of J.J. Nelson, because here's a player that since the season has ended, just through the attrition and what has happened with Floyd leaving, with Brown, the team thinks Brown's through the sickle cell, but I don't know. It was just some of the uncertainties there at the receiver position. Fitz, slow.
Getting older.
He's getting older. He's still going to be productive. But J.J. Nelson now looks to me to be a very interesting player. Where did he go in the first draft?
He went in the 11th round to our good friend Sean Ligon.
Ah, Sean Ligon. See, there you go. That's a very nice pick. That's a very, very nice pick for Sean. Congratulations, Sean. Who did you see in this draft that you think he, just 2 weeks later you can say, man, I sure am glad I got that guy?
I went after some guys, but the guy I wanted, got him. I probably reached for him, but it was Martavius Bryant in the fifth round. Uh-huh. With all this speculation about Brown, I really think Bryant's going to come back. Nobody else stepped up, so you know he's the number two there in a good offense. So I got him in the fifth round, may have been a little high, but he's young. I think he could be a great player.
I don't think so. I think you did just fine getting that player in the fifth round. He, for me, is the player that I have identified in the redraft. You know, last year my guy was Crabtree. I thought tremendous value at Crabtree in the sixth round and fifth round if you could get him. Bryant is my guy that fills that role this year. Crabtree's a player that I think will be overdrafted. He could possibly be one of the most. He, LeGarrette Blount, can you think of any other overdrafted guys? I really think Brandon Cooks is an overdrafted player.
He definitely is now. I Michael Thomas went with the 14th pick, and I thought that was a little high. Again, I know he's great, but he's with an all-time great quarterback who I don't know how many more years he has. And it could happen this year, and I think Michael Thomas' value drops with any other quarterback.
I would have to agree with that.
Yeah.
I have to agree with that. Where did Keenan Allen go in the draft?
Keenan Allen, good question. Yeah. Looks like I thought he went in the third. Yep, he went in the third round to Bobby Sangerman.
The Bobby Sangerman, you got you a winner right there, brother, because Keenan Allen will find a way to stay healthy. The good luck has to be on his side.
Now, a guy that went in the 11th round, a guy we talked about last year and had a great Super Bowl, Malcolm Mitchell.
Malcolm Mitchell was a comer in this league.
Yeah, no,
he is a true comer in this league. And I think some of the other players that they've been utilizing at the receiver position will give way to more snaps on the field. Who got Tyreek Hill? And where did he go in this draft?
He fell a lot farther than I thought. He went in sixth round, and he went to Justin Cox.
Justin Cox drafting out of the number one position. Justin Cox, you might have done the thing there to get you a championship in this league.
Wait, and this is really interesting. I think he went with three really interesting guys. Fifth, sixth, and seventh round, he went Golden Tate, Tyreek Hill, Tyrell Williams.
Whoa, that's a good-looking group. You know, in Tyreek Hill, first of all, you got the fastest player in the league.
Yep.
You got a coach that came out this week and said, hey, his snaps are going to double next year. Which, of course, you need to say that, Andy Reid, because it should have doubled from week eight on. You know, only Andy Reid could keep the job by keeping a Tyreek Hill on the bench. This is an explosive player. He's lived his life at the foot of the cross. I don't know what in the hell he got into in college because I don't think we know the whole story. But fifth-round NFL draft pick, fastest player in the league, successful player. They're going to look for ways to get the ball to him. I don't believe you can overdraft this player, and I think by August, hell, he's going to be going in the third.
He's going to end up being a slot catch guy. They're going to get him the ball a lot on screens. So you got to expect 7-8 catches a game, don't you?
Mm-hmm. 7-8 and a half, unless somebody shuts him down. And Macklin could be a beneficiary here.
Right.
Macklin could spend Macklin just spent a great deal of time one-on-one coverage.
Again, I love Andy Reid, but can Andy Reid realize that you guys score more than 21 points to win a game in the NFL?
He'll go for 24. He'll say, you know, we're gonna try to get into the mid-20s and win a little bit. He's not gonna beat the Raiders scoring that.
Well, you appreciate. I got to bring this up.
Bring it up.
My keeper league quarterback.
Oh, Derek Carr.
Derek Carr.
I already saw it. And where did you draft him?
I drafted him in the ninth round.
That is a steal. You stole him.
Yeah.
And I know quarterbacks weren't going that high in the keeper draft, but you definitely stole him there. Guys, you know, early, we live to draft in the KFFSC and the FFPC, anyone that plays high-stakes fantasy football. We live to draft, and I would invite anyone to come out. What we want to do is make the business season leading up to the draft, we want to make it more fun for you. We want to make it more competitive, and we want to get our owners involved. And it's a good time. We're about the only ones drafting this early, and so it's bringing some owners to us that have always thought about playing. Biplab Mandel from Minnesota, a noted player in the FFPC, has joined this coming draft. Bobby Sangerman is back again. Our 2016 champion, Mark Salinas, is in this draft. Ann Paddock, I believe, is going to jump in this draft. You know, we're looking at a opportunity. Our women are growing in involvement, not only in number, but in leagues they do. We might have a second female champion. Fetch, what do you think about that?
You never know. Hey, they're as smart as we are, trust me.
Well, maybe much, much smarter. You know, as you move around.
They play with less emotion. How about that?
Yes. And, you know, they're kinder, too, because if you look out over our membership and you say, well, women have to put up with all of us, you know, so that's one good thing. A tip of the cap to Kimra, who collected such a fantastic check for her win in another Las Vegas league this year. I think she knocked in $150,000 in that league. She then came back. Johnny Duckworth runs a private league through the playoffs, and Kimra won that as well. You know, she's just having
she's running good, is what you'd say.
She's running good. You know, folks, we're surrounded by great players. Fetch, yourself, you are a division winner this year. Congratulations. You'll be picking up another. The trophy husband will be picking up another trophy at our draft at the Horseshoe on August 25th through 27th this year. It's our intention, as my travels and Fetch's schedule will allow, to gather here more often or not, at least on a biweekly basis through the business season. We expect a lot of movement here in the next few days. We'll be posting this episode to Facebook and some updates and some commentary from Fetch. Fetch is going to join Facebook to do a little commentary by sometime around St. Patrick's Day after he sobers up. We'll get him tweeting a little bit. We'll get the word out there, you know, but there's a lot happening in football. It needs fantasy football players' attention. You'll be able to get a good start on what you plan to do in 2017 to move yourself into the championship bracket. Fetch, any other observations before we close it out here tonight?
No, just everybody keep watch that waiver wire. Watch what teams are going to do, because it's a big deal. This is when teams create championships for the next year.
Championships will be created for the next year. You will be a champion just by participating in the KFFSC. Give us a call at 502-523-5057. Plenty of time to talk about your plans and your schedule for participating in a great weekend of fantasy draft and a great month, August 2017, the great month of drafting. Get ready and play in our Dynasty Keeper League, February 23rd, 4 spots left. Get in touch with us as soon as you can. Thanks a lot, Fetch.
Have a good day.
If you want
games, we have them.
Keepers,
auctions,
progressives. Find it all
at KFFSC.com.